Good morning. Can you guys hear me? Okay. I have a red light, and I thought I usually have a green light, and I didn't know what that means. So somebody's telling me to stop already. That's not good. Good to be with you this morning. Good to be with you here in the new year. Let's get it out of the way real quickly. I know Alabama lost. You don't have to tell me. I watched every second of the devastation that was upon me. I've decided that if God cares about college football, he thought that we couldn't take the struggle over the next 11 days or so. So I'll be humbled and carry on. And I am rooting for Oregon, just so we can all be on the same page. I'd like to see Oregon win. I think you guys are overdue, so I'm glad to see that come. Although I really wish it would have been the two of us against each other. It would have been fun to watch. To remind you, something Roy mentioned. There we go. The character workshop for men that is coming up here on January 24th. We will get together here at 9:30 in the morning, and we will talk about character for about an hour and a half or so. Then we will eat lunch together, and then we will head over, and as Roy has prophesied, we will watch Oregon beat UCLA in basketball. And if the UCLA basketball that I watched a little bit of the other night's any indication, that might happen. They were looking a little rough the other night. But I hope you will come be a part of that. There's a sign-up sheet back there, and you can sign up either to just be part of the workshop and lunch or to be a part of the whole day and basketball. If you'd like to watch basketball, those tickets are $24.50, so we're not taking anything off the top of that. We're just charging you what the tickets cost us. But if you could sign up for that, the sooner the better. That would be easy for us to get the tickets. So we hope that you will make some time in your schedule for that, gentlemen. Here we go. If you'd like to turn in your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. I know we have been going through the life of Christ since I've been here, but I thought given the new year, it would be a good time to do something a little different just for a week. And then we're going to be doing some different things in the coming weeks that I will tell you a little more about. This year, if you've noticed, if you've been doing your weekly readings along with the church, we're reading through the book of Acts and studying that in our Sunday morning adult Bible class, the beginnings of the church. And we're going to talk a lot throughout this year about family as we know it, those folks in our house or those people that have just left our house after the holidays. We'll talk some about family as a church family, and we thought a good place to begin with that would be the beginning of the church as we know it in Acts 1 this week, as we've been reading, and in Acts 2 in the coming week. But we'll talk quite a bit about these ideas, and one of the things that we will talk about over the next few weeks on Sunday mornings is what it means to be a member of the church. What it means to take part in this, what it means to take on this calling in life. And as you begin a new year, I hope that's something that you might assess a little bit in your own life. I truly believe that it's more than just getting in your car on Sunday morning and showing up here and sitting and listening to me ramble on about something for a little while and singing along with a few songs and then heading out somewhere for lunch. I think there's a little more to it than that. And we'll talk about that over the coming weeks. And I hope that that's something that you will want to be a little more a part of your life. There's a lot that gets done around here, and Dave mentioned quite a few of those things when it comes to giving, but there are a lot of things that happen here, and those things don't happen without people doing them. And in most churches, what you have is a small number of people that do all those things where they wouldn't get done, and everybody else just kind of shows up. And we hope that that can be different here. We hope that everyone can feel a part and feel involved, and we'll talk over that over the next few Sunday mornings. But this morning, Ephesians chapter 4, and we'll begin in verse 17. So I tell you this, and insist on it in the Lord, that you must no longer live as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. Now, I will say, I didn't mention this to my wife this morning, every time I run across the word Gentile in Scripture, I'm reminded of my wife as a child, and I'll probably mess the story up, but I'll apologize in advance. When somebody asked her what religion she was, and she was, I don't know how old, younger child, seven, okay? She was 7 years old. Somebody asked her what religion she was, and she had drilled into her head, as many of us have along the way, that we are not a denomination. We are a non-denominational church. That's what we're reaching for. And so She didn't want to say Church of Christ because that didn't sound like the right answer because we're not supposed to do that. And Christian seemed a little general. And she knew she wasn't a Jew. And so she went with Gentile. I'm a Gentile. And so as we read along here, and you can laugh at that with me for the rest of time now, but every time I run across Gentiles in Scripture, it's the first thing that pops into my head. But we're not to live in this futility of our thinking as the Gentiles do, and I want you to notice the words of Paul here. I tell you, I insist on it in the Lord, and you must. Some pretty direct language, isn't it? There are a lot of times when we will say to someone else that we would like something from, you know, it sure would be nice if you would just, or you know what would be great if you would do this thing, or sometimes we will sit there and our drink will be empty and we're sitting in the living room and we will be waiting, hoping someone might be getting up and going to the kitchen soon so we don't have to, or, you know, you might just sit there and sure could use a drink right about now. And we have ways of asking for things. The guy who baptized me, who is one of the people that David is named after, when he was first married, he would sit in his recliner. And when his sweet tea, because that's what we drink in the South, his sweet tea would get empty, he would rattle the ice in the glass. And his wife dutifully would run over and grab the glass and take it and fill it up in the kitchen. Or she would come over sometimes with a pitcher and just fill it right there for him. And one day he did that on the wrong day. And he rattled that glass, and she'd not had a good day that day. And the next sensation he felt was a pitcher of sweet tea being dumped over his head. And he said it was the last time he ever rattled the glass, at least not to be funny. Every now and then he'll do it just to make a laugh. We have ways of asking for things. And sometimes they're a little more passive-aggressive, and sometimes they're a little more just a suggestion. And then other times they are very adamantly, you must, I insist in the Lord, and I tell you. Paul is very, very adamant about what he's about to say. These are important things to him, and as the Spirit gives Paul these words to say, they are things that God wants us in the church here at Ephesus, as we read, to know. I tell you, I insist on it in the Lord, you must. Don't be like the Gentiles. They are darkened in their understanding and separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. A lot of negative language for one verse. It's all due to the hardening of their hearts. And do we not see this around us a lot today where people know better? How many times have you heard in your life, probably a lot when you're a kid, you know better than that? You know better. How many times have you made a mistake, and as soon as you have made that mistake, you think to yourself, I know better than that. I still am learning here in Oregon as I drive around that there are bike lanes everywhere. We had one street in our town where we moved from that had a bike lane. And everywhere else, people might ride bikes, but there were no lanes. And when you would make a right turn, you wouldn't have a second thought about the fact that a bike might be there. I still have to think to myself quite a bit, right mirror, as I'm turning. And occasionally, I might forget. And I'm glad there hasn't been a biker there in the times that I forgot. But as soon as I don't think about it, I think to myself, you know better than that. You know better than to make that mistake. You've been trained. You've learned these things. And as Paul writes here, these people know better. But yet they have hardened their hearts. Because sometimes we want something different. Sometimes we want the things everyone else around us has. Sometimes we don't want to be dealt the burden of having to live in what seems like in our culture to be a more difficult way sometimes, but is honestly a more perfect way that God has laid out for us. They knew better, but yet their hearts were hardened. Having lost all sensitivity, they have given themselves over to sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. Having lost all sensitivity. Being a youth minister for 10 years, we saw a lot of movies as a youth group because teenagers like to watch movies. And I found myself, when we'd have these movie nights, I would screen the movie ahead of time. Some movie, a lot of times it'd be some movie from the 80s that I had seen and it was new to them. And I would watch these movies and I would think to myself, I don't remember how much stuff was in this movie that I can't show to my church youth group. Or can I skip over this? Can I mute this at this time? And I would watch and I would realize there's more and more in there that I just totally forgotten about. And I realized I was losing sensitivity to this. I would watch it and I would say to myself, well, I don't talk that way, I don't act that way, it's okay, it's just something I'm watching for entertainment. And I would realize that I'm losing sensitivity to this. Do we catch ourselves doing that sometimes? Do you catch yourself when you're around a lot of people that are just cynical, becoming cynical yourself? Do you catch yourself when you're around a lot of negativity, being more negative yourself? We lose sensitivity to what we really know to be true when we get caught up in the world around us. And that's the great challenge of Christianity, isn't it? Because we can't take this message to the world without being in the world. And yet if we become like the world, what's the point? There's no difference in how we're living. There's no difference in what we do. And when Paul writes here that they've lost all sensitivity, they've given themselves over to this sensuality so as to indulge in every kind of impurity, and they are full of greed. Paul could have written this in yesterday's paper, because this is the world in which we live. There is greed all around us. There is something more that we want. People will go home today, if they have not already, and if they still get the newspaper, that old relic of the old days, they'll open their newspapers up, and there are all kinds of stories, but also today, because it's Sunday, it's all the sales ads and all the things that you must have to make your life better. We get caught up in all of that. And he says that they have just lost sensitivity. And in verse 20, that, however, is not the way of life you learned when you heard about Christ and were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. This is not the way of life that we have learned. And again, thinking back a few slides here, we know better. We have learned something different. We have been brought up to understand what is important and what matters and what is relevant and what does not. We've been brought up to understand that the things that so many get caught up in just don't matter in the end, and yet we still find ourselves getting caught up in it. And I am as guilty as the next guy. I get caught up in it too. I see things that I want. I see ways I'd like to live, places I'd like to be. And yet we learn here that that's not what we have learned. We have learned something better than that. And somewhere way back when, you were taught something better than that. And yet sometimes we lose focus. You were taught, in verse 22, with regard to your former way of life. I love the wording there. Your former way of life. This is not the way you live anymore. This is what you used to be. You've been taught in regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires. Put off your old self. That is not who you are anymore. And I don't know what that is for you. It's something different for each of us, but there are things that we tend to latch on to that we just need to let go of. We have to put off our old self. We've got to let go. And what better time than the new year? It's this time of renewal when everything is starting new, and you think to yourself, if I could only let go of this thing or do this other thing. What better time to make those changes than in the new year? In verse 23, reminding us where we came from, You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds. By the attitude of your minds. So it all starts in our thinking. Oh, that's where the trouble begins, isn't it? Because we have been taught culturally that thinking is not the issue. It's what you say that's the issue, or it's what you do that's the issue. But you can think whatever you want to think. That's okay. And yet, biblically, we learn that where you're thinking, where your heart is, that's where your words and your actions come from. We've got to reset our minds. And so what does that mean? We have the it's gone. I see the bulletin board out there, and it's gone. We had a list of neighbors that we were loving. We have to reset our minds on that neighbor. Some neighbors are easy to love, some neighbors are hard to love. And I hate to tell you this, but when your neighbors look at you and me, some of us are easy to love, some of us are hard to love. And it probably depends on a lot on which neighbor and what they think. We have to reset our minds on what we think of these people. We have to reset on our minds on, oh, when I go to work, it's always such an awful experience. Can we make it better somehow? And I get it. Not everybody has a job that you love. Not everybody has a job that you're looking forward to. But can we make it better than it was yesterday? Everybody's going back to school tomorrow. Sorry. Can we make school better starting this week than it was during the last year? Can we reset our minds? Can we reset our minds on church? Can we change it from something that we go to on Sunday to something that we are? Can we change it from something that involves an hour and a half of your week to something that involves an awful lot of your week? Can we reset our minds on what part of our life God is? Whether he's something that's out there on the periphery or whether he's something at the core of who we are. And Paul here, through the Spirit, says that it's by the attitude of your minds that these changes take place. We have to decide today who we're going to be. And not decide next Thursday who we're going to be, and not decide February 1st or on your next birthday or somewhere down the road who we're going to be, but here and now, who is it that we're going to be when it comes to God? And to put on, in verse 24, the new self created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. To put on the new self, we're not just letting go of something, we are taking something on. We are becoming something that God has designed us to be. Now, the way that we looked at this on Wednesday night, if you weren't here, this was our whiteboard on Wednesday night. And I asked everybody in the room, tell me something you want to die to in 2015. And the left side of the screen here is things that people want to give up. People don't want to be those things anymore. People don't want to be ruled by those things anymore. People don't want their lives and their decisions made by those things anymore. And on the right side of the screen, we talked about what is it we want to live to in 2015. And these are the things that we want to be. These are the things that we want to do better. And my guess is, like the group there on Wednesday night, you might find some here that you associate with, and you might have something else in your head that you're thinking, I really need to let go of this year. Or I really need to become this year. And through God, we can. And that's the beauty of the whole plan, that God has made us and designed us in such a way that if we are not okay with the way we have been living, we can change that. And we can live in a different way, starting today. And I want you to consider for a minute, before we close, who is writing all this? Now, I understand that God, through the Spirit, puts it on somebody to write all this stuff down, but the guy writing all this is Paul. The guy writing all this, who is Paul, begins as Saul. And in the end of Acts 7, that we'll get to in our readings in a few weeks, we find Stephen being put to death for teaching the word of Christ. And at the end of that section, Saul was there giving approval to his death. And as we start chapter 8, it says, on that day, a great persecution broke out against the church at Jerusalem, and all except the apostles were scattered throughout Judea and Samaria. And by the way, a great persecution, not Christianity being unpopular, not we have to say happy holidays and not Merry Christmas, not all the stuff that we look at today, not prayer in schools, and all those are great causes, but people being killed, rounded up, taken from their homes, and killed because of their belief in Jesus Christ. This persecution breaks out. Godly men buried Stephen and mourned deeply for him, but Saul began to destroy the church. Saul began to destroy the church, going from house to house. He dragged off men and women and put them in prison. Now, I don't know what you look at today as the greatest enemy of the church. I think we would probably start with Satan and work back from there. But there are probably people in our world that you would look at and you would think of as these are people that make the church difficult. These are people that make spreading Christianity difficult. These are people that do not like God. Whatever enemy of the church you might look at in that way, Saul is so far beyond. As he is rounding up people and having them put in prison, he is there as they're being put to death, And he thinks he's doing it all for the right reasons, by the way, but he's not. He is an enemy of the church. And on the road to Damascus that we'll look at in chapter 9 of Acts later on in March in Bible class, he has an experience where Jesus comes to him and blinds him, and he realizes all of a sudden everything he has done. And could you imagine, and I don't think most of us ever experience anything quite like this, but having one moment where everything that you have done wrong hits you in the face. You can't ignore it. It is all right there. It is known, and you must decide what to do about it. And I will tell you what a lot of people will do at that point is run, because it's easier. They will run away. They do not want to face those things. They will leave them behind and let them go. And what Saul does is, what do I do? Clearly, there's got to be a change made here. What can I do? And then we find Saul, who becomes Paul, writing a pretty good chunk of your New Testament. You want to talk about a turnaround story? This is one of those, I love sports, this is one of those ESPN 30 for 30 things that you watch, where it's some guy who grew up an orphan and became this incredible athlete and changed the world and did all these things. Saul is so far beyond in his story anything we could imagine in a documentary, anything we can imagine in a feel-good movie. He is a guy that went from one extreme completely to the other. And if Saul can become Paul and do those things, then why can you and I not change who we are in 2015? Why can we not become a force for God? Why can we not become people that are known for our love for one another? Why can we not become people who love our neighbors? Why can we not become people who want to tell them about Jesus? We can. We can become people that are more positive and less negative. We can throw our cynicism aside. We can become people who are generous instead of stingy. Whatever that thing is that is holding us back, we can die to it and live to something very different, because God has created us to be that kind of people. So this morning, I think we all come in here with something. I think we all come in here with something that holds us back, something that we're embarrassed by, something that we hope no one ever finds out about, something we just wish we could change, and it keeps pulling us back in. And we can let go of that thing today. Now, is it always going to be easy? I don't think so. And I would imagine as Saul, now Paul, shows up in churches around the way, that there are a lot of people whose cousin or brother or father or child were dragged off by Saul's people that are not quite sure what to think about that guy that's sitting on the third row. They don't know what to do with him. And he probably got a lot of second looks and a lot of whispers, and he carried on. So is it easy to make that change? Not always. Will people try to drag you back into where you were? Absolutely they will. But through the power of God, can you overcome all that? Yes, you can. And it all starts with that moment that you decide to change, that you put the old self behind and put the new self on. And this morning, if that's what you need to do, whether it's through baptism or through confession or if there's something that we could pray about, please come while we stand and sing.